which was interesting, but definitely an order of magnitude less interesting than
Where
the
did you
Inside Job.
do that?
Oh, I did it in a very secretive manner in the privacy of my little room.
Did he have to call mom to untie you, or how did that work?
Oh, no. No, I mean, you can tie yourself up to a certain extent quite well with and untie yourself without any exterior assistance. Now, if the subject interests you, Juan, there is a lot of stuff on the internet.
Giovanni.
Giovanni, okay, tonight you're Giovanni. There is a lot of stuff on the internet about how to tie yourself up quite effectively without, remaining tied up permanently.
The internet is a great danger to our society. Not only can you learn to make bombs, but you can learn how to tie yourself. Do you have a URL?
A bigger pardon?
Do you have an internet location for this?
No, I think there is stuff
Can you
about.
suggest some keywords for searches?
Sure. The key resource for this sort of information is the alt.sex.bondage FAQ. So one has to look into that.
Fact has
FAQ.
FAQ, okay.
Yeah.
So did the internet play a role in your early development of
In my early development, the internet was simply not there because I got my first internet connection when I got it in the university, and I was, I think, let me think, I was 19 at the time, and in those years, nobody in Italy had internet for private use. There were no ISPs, essentially.
So was your first, when you lost your virginity, was that a moment involving bondage, or was it fairly straightforward?
Oh no, it was fairly straightforward. It was definitely
Well, the first time is never straightforward, but it was an experience that
relative
we could
term,
relate
Giovanni, relative term.
No, I would say, even if it does not pertain very much to the subject of the conversation,
That's fine.
that the way I lost my virginity was close to ideal because it was
Interesting.
a very sweet and pleasant moment, and it was done very slowly, taking all the time that it needed, and we're not in a rush, in a sense. So it worked out really fine.
Did you know you were going to do that day? Did you agree? Was there
We agreed, and in this, as in all my subsequent sexual activities, I have applied a rule that I think works quite well. That is that occasionally you might want to act on the rush of inspiration, that is, on the spur of a particular moment, right? Now, this may lead to wonderful things, for example, to a great scene or to a great experience for you and for everybody involved, but this can also lead to really huge screw-ups. So I have normally preferred to be safe, that is, occasionally to be blunt, that is to say, we're going to do this and that. You realize this? You agree?
Ah, I
So
guess
Giovanni and his problems with the legal system.
with the rules, yeah, BDSM people seem to be very much into rules by necessity, I suppose. But you applied these rules even to your
Even
first
early.
regular, normal sexual encounter, which I guess maybe as dangerous, but most of us survive them.
Makes you wonder if there's some kind of genetic correlation between wanting to do bondage and being very into rules.
Interesting.
So this woman that you had your first encounter with, I assume it was a woman,
She
was
was.
she also a virgin? I mean,
Oh,
or was she a corruptor in
No,
this case?
she didn't corrupt me. I tried to corrupt her, on the
Well.
other hand.
If you have any questions or comments about corruption, losing virginity, BDSM, and the European strand of it, you should call us at 621-WRCT. Or what's the other number, Chris?
268-WRCT.
Okay, thanks.
That's if you're on campus.
And the digits for that? Six.
Pardon me?
What are the numbers?
9728 is
9728.
WRCT.
Okay.
So I guess I have a question about the women being the resident woman. I know in this country a lot of problem that men have with trying to explore BDSM is that I know that a lot of American women are kind of very afraid of that because we're taught to be afraid of being dominated and to be strong and to be powerful. And is it the same in Europe? Are the women so, like, rape crazy, like, afraid of being dominated, or is it much different?
Well, Europe is a big place, and I know only about very little of it. And there are these different national cultures. For what I have seen, and for this very small slice of Italian society that that I know, that I have had experiences with, there is not the same concern or fear with about losing control for women. It is probably it is considered something that is that can be okay occasionally. Even if, of course, we have many women that that work, that have professions, and that are managers, so that certainly exercise responsibility and control in their daily life. So, yeah, I don't think there is much of a conflict here.
But difference with the American attitude?
Probably yes. Mm-hmm. Probably yes. But it is something that it is an observation that is very difficult to back up with proof clearly. So
right, right. Well, that agrees with my impressions, and again, I cannot prove it either.
But, yeah. So it sounds to me that up to this kind of first experience, that everything had been very fantasy based in terms of the BDSM side of things. When did that start to manifest itself in an active way in your actual sex life?
Oh, quite early.
Soon after that first time? Or?
Yeah.
And was it with that same person?
That same person, yes.
Interesting.
It happened. I think that I proposed the idea of tying her up probably a couple of months or maybe three after we started being together. So it was. Yeah, and maybe seeing it in, you know, with hindsight, it could have been a bit rash.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did she react?
She took to it very well, I would say. And
did she try self-tying first in order to get comfortable with the idea?
Maybe like masturbating together, you tie the
yourself together, see what happens.
Not much if you tie each other together.
That can be very dangerous. if you both get stuck, then your only resource is crying for help.
Calling mom.
Very embarrassing.
Very embarrassing. Extremely embarrassing.
But you wanted to be you wanted to be the top in that scenario, tying her up rather than her tying you up. Is that correct?
Well, my fantasies and my interests were already of the switch variety. But I think that if you have to. I mean, the person that initiates somebody else to this sort of thing, especially if he himself is totally new to them, to this sort of activities, may have a difficult time saying, "Tie me up," right? Just out of the blue, because at least as far as I have seen, there is much more knowledge. Much more technical knowledge involved in tying somebody up than in being tied up.
Is this just kind of Boy Scout knot tying knowledge? Or are you talking about safety issues? Or
well, it is. Yeah, it is partly Boy Scout like, knot craft, and part of it is part
sailors
of
sailors are really good at this.
Yeah, thing. I'm sure. Part of it is physical safety, like how not to block off circulation.
Mm-hmm. And that would be good.
Sorry?
That would be good.
And part of it is psychological safety, because this is a relationship, a particular situation, which is definitely out of what one normally experiences. So you should go to this sort of thing being prepared for exceptional things. And if there is a crisis or some sort of unusual situation that needs to be handled in somewhat, it is much easier for the person that ties up, or for the dominant, supposing they're the same, to apply knowledge. While, for example, I myself don't think that would feel completely comfortable in the hands of somebody that doesn't know how to deal with this sort of thing, so how to tie me up and how to make sure that I'm not terminally uncomfortable or that something is going horribly wrong.
Well, so some of our other BDSM practitioners have talked about safe words, you know, where someone could say red or stop or some kind of word that would mean back off. Are you, did you establish any kind of protocol for that beforehand?
Sure. It seemed extremely reasonable to me. It seemed a very good idea. And so I actually used it. And
so you had heard about that kind of thing?
I beg your pardon?
So you knew about safe words or had invented them yourself or had read about them on the internet?
I read about them as I read about things about, yeah, those blood circulation issues. I read about them in the ad sex bondage frequently asked questions list, and I read about them in the group itself, which proved to be an incredibly good and incredibly helpful resource. And at that time I didn't post because I was extremely not ashamed. I didn't feel uncomfortable with it, but I didn't want it to become a public matter.
Right.
So I just lurked.
Were you out to your family then or now?
No, I was not.
Lifestyle?
No, I was not. I was not. Definitely not.
This transmission does actually get carried in Italy, by the way. The Audio Active.
Yeah, I should say the numbers we mentioned before should come with the area code. It's country code 1, area code 412, and the phone numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728. So are you out now?
Well, I suppose that right now, yes. You have outed me.
Oh, no.
Is this something that people out themselves publicly with respect to?
I don't know in general. It is, I don't know, to me this one was, I'd say, a very good occasion to talk about this with people I am comfortable with. Hmm. So, and maybe to be of help to somebody.
Okay, so you and your girlfriend tied each other up, or maybe I'm getting ahead of you, you at least tied her up. But tying up is pretty vanilla in terms of in the BDSM community at least. So when did it get more kinky after that? Were you able to live your pirate fantasies?
I mentioned pirates at the beginning, but it was primarily an example. I don't have a pirate fetish. I say this lest somebody tomorrow shows up with a scimitar and a parrot, right?
If you think of that, show up in my house because I just for this realism, for it like that. So, sorry.
No problem.
The hook is very important too.
Yeah. So did your relationship with your girlfriend get more kinky over time?
It probably got more kinky, and it proceeded into some aspect of fetishism, but
specifically, let's delve right into the specific.
We shall delve, but before that, we're going to listen to a caller.
Ring, ring.
Hello, are you there?
Hi, this is Ralph.
Hello, Ralph. How are you? Are you the Ralph that was in the studio two weeks ago?
Ralph of the Velvet Wand.
Yeah.
Hello, Ralph. What's up?
I wanted to respond to Corey's comment about that bondage being less kinky than other things.
Dr. Kosakum, please.
It just ain't so.
I'm sorry, you're agreeing that bondage is less kinky, or you're disagreeing?
I am disagreeing.
Oh, okay.
Well, care to explain that?
And it's just the it's different from other things, and I know people who are willing to be flogged who just can't deal with being tied up. It's people have different buttons. What's hot for and powerful for some people is the light or too much for other people.
I suppose tying up is more loss of freedom, and the other one is more pain, and the two are
probably very different.
They're different. Similarly, there are people who can get tied up very tightly who can't stand to be tickled.
So I think to us lay people, bondage is less kinky than masochism or sadism. And I wonder why that is, why we have that impression. At least for Kosakom and I.
Perhaps more people can imagine themselves being tied up than actually enjoying the pain aspect of sex.
Maybe
the loss of control is actually something that that it seems a little bit easier to cope with for the majority of the crowd. Which is not to say that it is less kinky. I mean, I would kind of agree that
maybe we're also a little more used to connecting loss of control with sex, and we're not used to connecting
so
much.
It still seems a little bit bland, though. I guess it's a matter of degree. I mean, if you tied somebody up and left them alone for hours, or beat them while they were being tied up, or dripped hot wax on them, I mean, I can see how you could make tying up be very intense, but just kind of hold my hands above my head while you penetrate me seems pretty mild to me.
But you can also make the love bites during sex as an equally mild form of SM. So yes, there are mild forms of bondage, and that there are also mild forms of SM and DS and so forth.
So what would be a non-mild form of bondage? How would you tie somebody up so that it would be really extreme?
Okay, how about mummifying someone in saran wrap so that they're completely enclosed in saran wrap that cannot move at all?
Yeah, you did mention that 2 weeks ago. You even had the wrap with you.
Yes, it's true. It's very hot, but it's also very heavy. Yeah, and
we should say at this point that WSGT does not promote any particular brand of wrapping material.
And WSGT certainly hopes that you know what you're doing before you do something like that, which could cut the ability to breathe.
There are plenty of safety issues going on there.
Does that make someone microwave safe?
Is it on the bracelets on?
Yeah, as long as there is no method involved, right?
Ralph, do you also agree that this particular news group is a good source of information, or do you have a counter opinion?
I haven't read it in many years because it got filled up by spammers. But I agree that the FAQ for that news group is excellent and a very good place to start.
Do you have any delicious web pages that you could point us to now that you're on the air?
I could do a quick web search for you, but nothing.
And do search for the tying yourself up web page that Walter was referring to, if you have time. But I don't mean to force you into that.
I could do a web search for you, but I don't have anything off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. All right. So any further comments or questions? Do you want to stay in the line? Whatever.
I'll go back so I can turn on the radio again, but I'll call in again if I have something more just about off about.
Thank you for your call, Ralph.
Sure. Bye.
Bye. So you were listening to the past two shows that we've had on BDSM, were you?
I didn't have the chance. I listened to some of it on tape, though.
That's too bad, because I wanted to ask you how it was different, how the Italian experience was different from the three cases of American.
I have talked with some of these people in privately, and one thing that you very rarely get in Italy, and that I certainly did not get, is the feeling of a BDSM community or of a group of people that that practice these sort of things.
So you didn't have dungeon monitors, for example?
No, I didn't have
or
a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
No, essentially you are very much out on your own. Now, I know that there are certain small and secretive groups of people, but they are... Imagine them as very exclusive and small clubs, and it is really difficult, especially if you are this overly abundant thing that is a young heterosexual horny male.
Uh-huh.
It is very difficult to get into anything like that.
Did they ever book the Colosseum there? And
no, no, nothing public like that. No public BDSM pride. No, very little public.
So it's all very hush
pride
hush
things. Yeah, it is all very hush hush.
Well, it's pretty hush hush here too.
But I think you indicated earlier that a BDSM practitioner in Italy would be considered more of an outcast than in the United States.
Well, but just to close the previous subject, here, for example, there is this thing called a burger munch, essentially a group of BDSM enthusiasts.
A burger munch?
Burger munch?
Burger munch, yeah.
Burger munch.
Yeah.
Boy, how come all these things have to do with Germanic languages? I don't know.
Anyway, what's a you know, for the people who don't know in our audience, what's a burger munch?
It is essentially, I'm not entirely familiar with the thing because I never went to one. I heard about them when I was in Italy and I dreamt about them, but I couldn't go to one, clearly. It is essentially a social reunion of people that do BDSM in various ways and in various manners with various intensities, and that essentially meet in a social place. So, and it is about burgers because that would be the typical fair, so in a sort of generic place, and talk. And it is not what is called the play party. So there is no. Usually, I have been led to understand that there is no flogging going on the spot. Because it might be just a public venue. But it is an occasion for people to meet others that may share the same tastes. And this, for example, in Italy doesn't happen. Actually, I find it quite difficult to conceive of it in Italy, because it would require a degree of coming out that just isn't there.
So I feel like we're still a little bit behind in terms of the history of some of the transformation of your personal growth into BDSM, because it sounds like we're just at the threshold of, you know, an acceptance in the relationship or in a relationship. And one of the things that, you know, we've talked a lot about is this notion of the BDSM community, when actually a vast majority of people participating in BDSM are probably doing it in the home or not part of a network of people, you know, who are doing it publicly. So it is. When, if ever, was there a transition from bringing it out of the relationship into something more active?
For me, it was always part of a relationship. Mm. And actually, I find it quite difficult to think of BDSM outside of a relationship. So, in a sense, the idea of being tied up by some, let's say, between quotes, random person, right, doesn't really turn me on much. It has to be somebody I love.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is some room in between. Like Ralph was telling us 2 weeks ago that he had once been in a very intense scene where he was whipped by somebody, I believe, and somebody else was going to call the safe word if he couldn't, you know, the whole thing. But anyway, there were three or four people involved that he obviously didn't love, but they were good friends. Would that be acceptable?
Probably, but all the same, probably had difficulties in imagining this, because thinking back of Italy, I didn't have anybody or any particular friend to whom I could come out in such a manner, right?
I guess you need the dungeon parties to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. The burger munchies. Or
yes, yes. You got
burgers and munchies. That sounds like lunch.
So, Walter, I feel like I'm not directly connecting to your experience. I mean, we're talking in very abstract terms here. I wonder if you could delve into some of the dirt, so to speak, and give us an idea of, like, what's your, you know, what's a great scenario for you?
Oh, well, for me...
Let's munch some burgers, Walter.
Okay. Now, for me, a great scenario I can describe in quite a bit of detail and...
That's perfect.
And... I of course, before trying this at home, be prepared, be safe. But I think that this has already been discussed to a certain extent in the previous broadcast. One great scene that happened to me was when my girlfriend dressed up in black, and that included opera-length gloves, which look absolutely great.
That's up to the elbow?
A bit higher than
a
that.
A bit higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Upright, not a well spread.
Oh, I see. So she dressed completely in black with stockings and heels. And then I proceeded to tie her up completely so that she couldn't move at all. And I tied her up in a sort of in a horizontal position. So it was quite comfortable.
I'm trying to visualize this. So the only piece of flesh that was showing was the little stretch between where the glove ended and her dress sleeve ended.
Excuse me, I wasn't precise with that.
It's very important for me. Yeah.
she was wearing a, let me think, you would call it a leotard, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So this leaves a certain, a good amount of flesh exposed.
Okay.
Right. And I tied her up in a sort of comfortable horizontal face-up position. And this was done because the plan was that she would be tied up for quite a bit of time. And after doing that, I blindfolded her.
Was she tied with her extremities in a line or spread?
Arms tied in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And legs tied together, but yeah, legs tied together.
And not tied to any object, just tied to herself.
Yeah, in this occasion it was just tied to herself.
Okay. Sorry, the details are all important for my fantasy. Yeah.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, Giovanni.
Go on, please.
Now, blindfolding, for example, may sound like a little detail, but depending on the person you're dealing with, it can bring a huge amount of intensity, because this is something everybody can experiment. When our eyes are covered, other senses become sharper, so one can usually smell or hear things that he wouldn't normally perceive.
Do you ever use earplugs in the same
thing? I have tried using them, but I realized that at least I don't like wearing them, because they I don't really know why, but they turn me off. Mm-hmm. So they are definitely unsexy, at least to me. But, yeah, I know that there are people that do that. And then, after I had, in a sense, completely immobilized her, I proceeded to tease her. And for a very long amount of time, and actually the whole point of this scene was the teasing, and the fact that she couldn't get away from this.
This was teasing that was part of a role. Were you pretending to be aggressive, or was it just good nature? Ha ha! Now you're tied up, and I'm going to have lunch. Ha ha ha! What kind of thing was this?
I said teased, and now I realize that I should have used a more precise verb. Then by teased I meant that I caressed her, I kissed her, I licked her, I nibbled her.
Tantalized,
yeah. Mm. So, and I did this for quite a bit of time, and I think that this particular scene has a bit of a paradoxical nature, right? Because in a sense, yes, you are dominant because you control what this other person that you have tied up feels. But in another sense, you are completely dedicating yourself to this other person. You are being extremely attentive, extremely precise in what you do, extremely careful. So,
everybody who talked about BDSM has mentioned that. I think that's the key that makes it understandable to everybody else. It's good of you to say it again.
So could she speak? Could she give you feedback, or was she gagged in some way?
She could speak. She was not gagged, but I think that she went a bit nonverbal, or she was just.
Did the beast emerge?
Oh, the beast!
There it is now.
No, the beast did not emerge, and in a sense, I am not entirely comfortable with the beast emerging from me.
Mm-hmm.
because I realized the potential for damage of various sorts.
You European men are so much more civilized. I'm just so impressed. Like, I've talked to women that are into BDSM, and they say a lot of the things that you're saying, whereas I found that more men that I talk to seem to be the opposite.
But, you know, this is just the way I do it. Within BDSM, there are so many variations and so many manners and styles of doing it that I think that I can only say, yeah, this is what I like, this is what I do, but it is not clear that you can say, well, my kink is okay, your kink is not, outside of certain ground rules that have certainly been discussed.
And there you go, giving further proof of your civilized manners.
That's right.
But in defense of the weird American men that we've had talking about this, I must say that they also emphasized being in control of how far they would go, and that sometimes when they were, perhaps they had had a bad day at work, they would be sure not to indulge in any of this kind of activity. So
part of my mental picture that's missing is how is your girlfriend reacting to all of this teasing? Is she writhing and
she was getting incredibly excited, and she certainly wanted to have sex there then in the instant, and the other part of the game was that I was not going to have sex with her immediately.
Yeah, go on.
Someone get Giovanni a glass of water.
I love that. Come on.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I was not going to have sex with her immediately. And the part of the fun for me, part of the what one could call the head trip, was that I was essentially deciding when she was going to come and when we're actually going to have sex. And It lasted for quite a bit. I think this was one of the finest scenes. Oh, we used toys, too.
Such as?
Wait, how long did it last?
I think that it lasted for a couple of hours.
That's good.
Oh, my God.
I am envisioning a whole weekend, actually, right now.
I'm sure you are, Giovanni.
Yeah.
You can certainly do that.
Constant teasing. Anyway, so toys was the next department.
Oh, yeah, toys. Well, I mean, there is a whole, an incredible array of paraphernalia that one can use in this sort of activities. Some of it looks quite depressing, but it all depends on the use you have in mind or on the function you're using them for. Should I go into detail?
Well, give us an example of your favorite toy.
Now, let's take the garden variety dildo.
Did you say ding dong?
He said garden variety.
Garden variety. Garden
dildo.
Variety.
Dildo.
This is,
yeah, there was. Yeah.
Am I allowed to say this?
Yeah. Dildo is fine. Garden variety, I'm not sure.
Garden variety. Okay.
It sounds so much more refined in Italian, I have to say.
How do you say dildo in Italian?
We use the same word.
Oh, yeah,
but it's just with the accent.
In Spanish, you say consolador, which means counselor.
Counselor.
Oh, jeez.
Never heard of Spain.
Anyway, so what sort of things can you do with? Well,
well, I mean, the point is that
the point. Sorry.
Yeah, it shouldn't have too much of a point. Now, the point is that in itself, it is not a particularly sexy object, right? I mean, it is this cylindric device and
plastic,
usually in depressing colors, and
it's not made out of Italian
cold, hard, lifeless.
Yeah, occasionally squishy, but nonetheless lifeless. And if you use it in the wrong manner, and this depends highly on the person concerned, it does nothing, right? But if you use it in the right way, it can certainly be an aid. Now, I don't think that, I never use them as the center of a scene. they're just there for a function. For example, I have been told that for a woman, being penetrated by a dildo that just stays there is something that is in part exciting, but in part frustrating, because this thing provides not direct stimulation. It just
Do we have corroboration?
Yes, I would say so. Okay. At first you're like, oh, this is nice, and then after that you're like, oh, I wish you would do something.
Yeah. Yeah, just
this is with a stationary.
So this is this is part of the teasing, I suppose.
Yeah, this is definitely part of the teasing.
So I don't mean to jump out of this specific scene, but the pain that's associated with BDSM, the pain here it seems more of just agony the frustration.
Sexual frustration.
Are there additional things that involve actual levels of physical discomfort associated?
Or did you experience any of them? I guess there are.
Oh yeah, I mean there certainly are. As far as my experience goes, this is quite limited. For example, I have never been flogged. I have been whipped a bit.
Whipped a bit.
Yeah.
What is the difference between flog and whipping? I'm sorry.
Oh, for flogging you use a you will laugh. For flogging you use a flogger, and to whip you use a whip. Now a flogger
Kafka land, man. The burger munchers.
The muncher burger.
So what is a flog and what is a whip? A whip is a single thread.
A whip is a single thread.
And a flog has multiple.
Yeah, multiple
things. A whip would be worse than a flog.
It depends very much on the kind of whip and on the fashion in which you use it.
I'm actually a bit,
I'm actually a bit uncomfortable discussing this because I'm not an expert. Hmm. So certainly people could call in and say.
That's as opposed to the rest of us who are experts in all these fields that we discuss freely.
Doctors of flogging out there, feel free to call in and let us know.
You have five more minutes and the phone numbers are country code 1, area code 412, phone number 621-9728 and 268-9728. So security is very important, and everybody who's been talking about it has been emphasizing that. And this is a public affairs program, and we should perhaps emphasize that again. What sort of safety precautions do you take?
Well, part of the general safety includes keeping good communication with the person you are doing a scene with. So,
as you gag them and flog them, that's a little difficult.
Yeah, and for this, one can use special devices. For example, if you have somebody that is gagged, you may give them something to hold in their hand, and you may agree with them that the moment they open their hand and this thing falls out, it means that they want the scene to stop, right? So even if they are prevented from speaking, they can always signal this. But these communication devices and even safe words are actually only an additional channel, because at least to me, the primary channel should be your sensitivity in perceiving what the other person is feeling and what kind, for example, of hurt she is feeling or he is feeling. So communication first of all, and then there are certain things that are connected with human anatomy. For example, no matter how careful you are, if you have a rope around the neck of somebody, you run a risk. And now that may in a sense be part of your fantasy. For example, you may fantasize about leading somebody around on a leash or something like that. But then you have to have the technical knowledge, for example, that is needed to tie a knot that doesn't slip, right? That retains that remains where you put it. So I'd say that before entering this sort of activity, and some of these may be dangerous even, and it may not be readily apparent, one should read all that is available, or most.
Which the FAQ would cover this. All sex bondage FAQ.
That FAQ is very heavy on safety, and it really hammers the point home.
Also, I imagine you should just go through everything that's going to happen and try to think of everything that could possibly go wrong. I think the knot could be cut that way, right?
Yeah, and there are certain there are some things that a couple of things that I'd like to mention that are a bit tricky. Now there are things that look innocuous and are dangerous, and there are things that are the other way around. Now, for example, the police manacles. They are a sort of standard, commonplace SM prop. Now, they're dangerous because the kind that one normally manages to...
This is like handcuffs, is that the same?
Yeah, handcuffs. Okay. Mm-hmm. The kind that one normally manages to get is prone to getting stuck. And besides, it is this tight metal thing that does bad things to your skin on your wrists. So while it may look innocuous, it is actually a bit dangerous. And there is something similar for ropes. Thin ropes are more dangerous than thick ropes. And it is a bit paradoxical because if you show somebody a thick, say, a 3/4 inch rope, it looks really impressive, right? But it is actually much easier on the skin, for example, than a thin, evil rope.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I wanted to talk about the improvisation versus the planning that you need for safety also, but we have Ralph on the phone again who wants to talk about flogging and whipping. Hello, Ralph, are you there?
Howdy.
Hi, so what do you have to say about my confusion with flogging and whipping?
What were your questions?
Well, my question was, what was the difference? But I guess that has been resolved. A flog is something with multiple tails and a whip has a single one, is that right?
Yes. And a flogger, as I think of a flogger, it will usually have the flat tails. And I would describe a cat as being like a cat of nine tails with braided tails, which are nastier.
So flogs in general are nastier than whips?
No, I would say that a single tail whip is nastier than a flogger in general. And floggers, it's much easier to be thuddy with a flogger than with a single-tail whip.
It's much easier to be what, sorry?
Steady.
Steady.
Thuddy was the word that I used.
Studly? Study? What? Sorry?
Thud.
Oh, okay.
Two types of experiences you can get with floggers and whips and so forth are described as thud and sting. So thud is like the broad, deep feeling you get from like hitting something with a fist.
Oh, this is onomatopoeic meanings, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thud.
Right.
And sting is a lighter, sharper sensation.
Like a fire cracking or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, don't go away, Ralph. So I have this question. We already talked to you about it, but I don't know. I hope that this is my only remaining issue of a misunderstanding with BDSM, which is the improvisation. I need improvisation to enjoy what I do. That passion thing has to come and go, and I'm supposed to not control it. Maybe I'm doing my own private BDSM inside. But.
No, I agree that improvisation is important. Now, so the negotiation can be just setting out the rules so that that you don't accidentally stumble into something that's going to make your partner scream in horror.
Right, but you're getting hot. You're getting the idea of spending the next few hours having the best time of your life, and all of a sudden you have to stop and negotiate. Did you negotiate in Italy with your girlfriend?
Well, I think that negotiating should be done coolly and before you start getting hot.
But once you already know what's going to happen, so by the time you're already hot, at least I am.
No, but I mean, I think that the negotiating bit is best done with laying down certain ground rules. For example, you may find, you may find a woman that says, this particular activity doesn't turn me on at all. Actually, it repels me, Right. So it actually boils down...
Crapology.
Yeah. For example. Yeah. For example, it actually boils down to knowledge again. I mean, you have to know what works or what face to work with your partner. And once you have these things in place, then you can improvise because you have already defined a space within which your improvisation and your passion may be let free. Actually, yeah, I described that scene before, and maybe I made it sound as if it was all planned and laid down in detail from before, but it was not. I definitely improvised and did things the moment that they seemed right and according to what my momentary inspiration, as you very aptly put it, told me to do them. But all of them within this framework of within this framework of knowledge, it is actually a framework of trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and within that framework, you really can do the sorts of improvisation and experimentation with minor changes to what you've been doing, and a willingness to back off if you do something that doesn't work out. And so sometimes you say, this doesn't work, and you back off. And sometimes you say, ooh, that really makes you squirm in interesting ways. I'll do that some more.
And I do suppose that we all go to see plays, even though we've seen them before, read them before, and Shakespeare keeps being performed over and over again. So I guess having a plan is not a bad thing. Anyway, we're reaching the end, and we have to make a couple of announcements. Thank you, Ralph, for calling again.
Certainly.
Okay, so our talent manager informs me that we have more and more BDSM for next week. What is going on, Mr. Kosakom?
Well, I'll defer that question to Dr. Love, excuse me.
Thank you. Is it Dr. Kosakom?
I'm only a counselor at this point.
Yeah.
But not in the Italian sense.
Well, I think the...
that was the Spanish sense. Yeah. We are not weird in Italy.
So what is up for next week?
Next week is a must-hear show because we have a special, perhaps very controversial guest. In the BDSM world, he has what's known as a 24/7 relationship, which is one of the most intense types of relationships available. We have a man who actually owns a woman.
Now, this feminists, step on up. We want your calls.
This may outrage
and
you.
And she will be here also, I understand.
Yes, the slave will be here. So this may outrage you. This may intrigue you. So you must tune in to Entering the Inner Sanctum, the Mind of a Master.
That's nice.
Yeah, I started reading that Meeting the Master book, by the way, that somebody called in some time ago. It's not bad. It's pretty good. I recommend it. Elisa Wald, I think, is the name of the author. And also, we have started receiving fan mail. We got one letter that we were passing around as we were talking today. Thank you for the erotic pictures, I suppose. There isn't much to discuss. There are a lot of erect penises, that's all. But if you would like to send mail of a more communicative nature, please
not.
Do.
Or not.
So that was fine.
We need a decor in here.
That's true. We post it.
You can either send email to wrct@wrct.org, and please indicate that it's for Loveline, or you can send physical U.S. mail or otherwise to WRCT 5020, well, Loveline, WRCT 5020 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15213.
And also, if you have comments about the show, if you like what we're doing, or dislike what you're doing, please drop us a postcard or an email as well. We'd love to hear from our listeners.
Or if you don't think we're strange enough, write to us. Tell us about yourself.
Tell us about your inner sanctum so that we can enter it in a show in the future.
Okay, so it's close to midnight. This is WRCT Pittsburgh, and keep on listening and keep on trucking. Bye.